Good evening and welcome to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com, another Tuesday in excellent internet radio. We have a good show for you guys tonight, albeit probably slightly abbreviated. We've been having some technical difficulties the last couple days, but we still got interviews in with U.S. Senate candidate Richard Murdoch, as well as National Policy Chairman for the Young Republican National Federation with Dr. Jason B. Whitman. Jason's going to be giving us his take on basically with the whole Obama and Julia and even his point of view on what happened in Indiana's primary last Tuesday, in which Richard Murdoch, again, our guest this evening, beat incumbent Dick Lugar. Man, I got to tell you, I just want to give you a couple of my thoughts here real quick. Last week's election was stunning in so many ways. I remember it quite well. Obviously, it was only a week ago, but Fingers Malloy and I were sitting there getting ready to do the live broadcast, and we're thinking, well, you know, this thing is going to be close. At least I thought it was going to be close. And it's going to, we will not be calling this race. We'll be doing interviews. We'll be taking care of everything. And this thing won't be called at least until probably 9:30. This will take us the whole evening. But the buzz and the excitement in the Victory headquarters was palpable. And I saw a friend of mine who had recently come back from D.C. and is helping out the Murdoch campaign. So I walked on over to him and I said, "How you doing?" And he's checking his BlackBerry the whole time. And he's getting results from precincts and counties from all over the state. And they are telling him exactly by how much Richard Murdoch is winning this election. And he says to me, "This thing's going to be called pretty soon." I said, "No way. I mean, the polls just closed in Northwest Indiana and Southwest Indiana. How can we be calling this race already?" He says, "You watch, it's going to be called here pretty quickly." And so that was about 7:15. And I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to make too much of this, and we'll just kind of continue going on with the setting up. And, of course, there we were having internet issues as well. I swear, it's something that's just plaguing the show right now. Anyway, we continue on with the setup. And lo and behold, we hear, "MSNBC just called it for Richard Murdoch." I'm like, "No way. No. We're going to continue setting up. There's no way this thing has been called so soon. Absolutely not." And then, well, lo and behold, 7:30, 7:20, between 7:20 and 7:30, it's official. You start hearing the New York Times has called it, other outlets, NBC News, ABC, Fox News. They're all calling it, AP. Richard Murdoch has won. And they called it with him winning 60-40, and it maintained that pretty much the rest of the night. It was absolutely stunning to see someone of Richard Lugar's stature, someone who has served in the U.S. Senate from Indiana for 36 years, defeated. And I'm going to tell you why he lost. There were many reasons why, but I don't think a lot of people outside of Indiana really understand. They probably hear, "Oh, it was, you know, it was the Tea Party. It was all these other outside groups." And I'm not going to. They definitely had their part. Let's not get that wrong. Their involvement was very important. They were playing the grassroots game better than anybody ever expected. But the thing was, is that this was a negative race. And if you call a negative ad where someone calls out your record, if you call that a negative ad, well, you're just joking yourself. Because what the Lugar campaign did to Richard Murdoch was try to publicly eviscerate him by calling him a liar, by calling him a sham, by calling him everything you can think of. They could not throw anything that would stick against him. And you know why they were scared? Because Richard Murdoch had him up against a wall. They had the Lugar campaign up against the wall with the whole residency issue. And we had Richard on this show just a week prior to the primary, and he talked about the audaciousness of the Lugar campaign to sue the people of Indiana to make sure that he maintained his position on the ballot because, well, he hasn't owned a home here since 1977. The home that he had, which he was still registered at, up to this year, he had not lived in since 1977. He had not owned it, and yet he was still registered there, which, by all accounts, is actually very much wrong. Well, anyway, Lugar went through all of this. But the fact is that he was constantly in the news, and not in a positive way. And the whole residency issue brought him down. and I will mark my words, the residency issue, the fact that he has been an incumbent for 36 years, let's not deny this anti-incumbency attitude. It is out there and it is palpable. And if there are people who are running for re-election and they have been pretty much absent from their home state, I guarantee you the voters will respond and they will vote them out. Orrin Hatch, he's running for his electoral life, but he looks like he may survive, and I'll tell you why. Because, frankly, as soon as he realized he had a challenger, he started paying attention to his constituency again. Now, frankly, he shouldn't get off so easily, and he probably won't. He's going to have a tight primary. But the thing is that he paid attention, whereas Dick Lugar told the people of Indiana, specifically the Tea Party, get real. That was his response, people. And frankly, that kind of attitude, that's going to get you kicked out. The haughty, self-serving, think that you deserve a seat, that is going to get you kicked out, people. And you will feel the wrath of the voters. And we saw that whole residency issue play out in one other race in the 5th District in Indiana. Congressman Dan Burton has announced that he's not seeking re-election, and so it was a crowded primary to replace him. David McIntosh, a conservative congressman who represented Indiana from 1995 to 2001, served well. He was very much a conservative. He decided to not seek re-election in 2000 because he wanted to run for governor. He ran, and unfortunately, he lost. However, by his loss, we were granted Mike Pence in the 6th Congressional District, who is now running for governor of Indiana. Interesting how that plays out. I think Mike Pence has a little bit of a better chance at winning the gubernatorial seat than David McIntosh did. All that aside, the residency issue plagued David McIntosh as well. You see, he had not resided in Indiana since 2006. And the thing is that he can claim that he voted here, but he would not release his tax returns. He would not supply any proof other than rental units that he lived in Indiana. And frankly, what people who come to this state don't realize, and that they seem to not get, was that we had a Secretary of State who had a residency issue. He was found guilty, guilty, by the court here in Indiana, and it was upheld by the state Supreme Court. He was guilty. He had to give up his position as Secretary of State because he had committed voter fraud, because he did not vote where he supposedly lived. Or he was voting at his ex-wife's house, where he claimed residence, but he didn't exactly live. And here these people think they can come back in and run for re-election. The people of Indiana will not have anything to do with that, and that is why David McIntosh lost. Residency has all of a sudden become a very key issue here in Indiana, people. And I fully expect to see that play out, maybe in even other races. There's already been rumors that John Gregg is going to try to apply this to Mike Pence, but Mike Pence, he's a brilliant guy, and I'm going to play this ad for you here in a little bit. His very first ad, but he's coming out swinging in a very Mike Pence sort of way, and he establishes himself as a true Hoosier, as someone who has loved Indiana, who has served Indiana ably in the United States Congress, and now wants to serve them ably as Indiana's next governor, succeeding Mitch Daniels. I know I talk a lot about Indiana, but frankly, there's a lot going on here. You know, Obama's not going to win this state again, but we have an exciting Senate race between Joe Donnelly and Richard Murdoch. And I tell you, Richard Murdoch has momentum behind him. He has momentum at his back. He has Mike Pence below him on the ballot. He has Mike Pence's momentum. He has congressional races. We're going to take 7. I guarantee you, 7 of 9 congressional seats, Republicans will have them at the end of Election Day in November. And Mitt Romney, he is going to win Indiana. He will have Mitt Romney's momentum behind him as well. This is going to be a good year for Republicans in Indiana, my friends. And I tell you, it's an exciting time to be a Hoosier. And it's an exciting time to know what's going on in Indiana because it affects everyone. If you don't believe me, well, just watch how this all plays out. Anyway, we have a great show for you coming up tonight. Richard Murdoch is our first guest. Next, we're talking to Jason Whitman. But right now, I'm going to play for you a little ad that happens to be running. Well, at least we hope it's going to be running soon. The first ad from Congressman Mike Pence as he runs in the general election for governor of Indiana. Here it is.
Mike Pence is a lifelong Hoosier. He grew up in a hardworking home where you did your chores and you cracked the books. He went on to earn college and law degrees. Mike became president of the Indiana Policy Review Foundation and started a successful career in radio. When we first met, It was love at first sight. On our first date, we went skating at the Pepsi Coliseum at the State Fairgrounds. We skated around for a little while, and then he reached over and took my hand. We held hands as we skated. Of course, Mike was right there to catch me if I fell. A year and a half later, we were married. Mike's a caring and encouraging father who inspires our own children every day. He has a servant's heart, and he always puts others first. There are two things I know about Mike Pence. He loves our family, and he just loves Indiana. This year, we'll celebrate our 27th wedding anniversary, and I'll never forget that very first date.
Conservatives, when you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Moco Choco, whatever, and the Wacko Latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
FTR Radio is from the right radio, online at FTRradio.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I am extremely pleased that we have U.S. Senate candidate for the general election, Richard Murdoch, here from Indiana on the radio with us. We had him on pre-primary. We have him back now as a victor, as our nominee. Richard, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing incredibly well. You know, it was just almost to the minute a week ago right now that we were getting the good news. And honestly, Josh, there's been times since then when it just strikes me and it kind of sinks in what we've done, and other times I'm still kind of moving in the pre-primary mode, so it's catching up with me, but we feel very, very good, and we're really pleased that we had the tremendous show of support around Indiana that we had last week.
Talk about tremendous support. You defeated the incumbent Dick Lugar by 20 points when many, including myself, were predicting this race to end up a lot closer, anywhere from 4 to 6 points. I predicted you'd win, but I didn't expect by this much, and you took 90 out of 92 counties. How does that make you feel? I mean, were you just shocked by the outcome of that race?
Well, it may sound strange, and I've been around politics a long time, but I never entered this race with the certainty that I would win as I did in this race. I knew from day one we would win because I had spoken to 90 of 92 county chairmen in late 2010 and early 11, and they assured me there was just not any sense of loyalty to Mr. Lugar, and a lot of people thought it was time for someone else. So winning wasn't a surprise, but yeah, I totally agree. I thought we would win by 8 or 9 points. I was hoping for double digits, but to get to 22 points against a 36-year incumbent was remarkable. As you said, we won 90 of 92 counties. We lost Boone County by just over 100 votes. And the only county Mr. Lugar won was Marion County, which, of course, is Indianapolis. And there, I think the final percentages were 54, 46, something like that. So, you know, the good thing about those numbers, certainly the Democrats, no question, they wanted me to win, but they were hoping it'd be like 51 to 49 or 50.5 to 49.5, and they thought the party would be split and wouldn't get back together. I think now they're having that moment of be careful what you wish for, you might just get it. The party has come together immediately. Last Wednesday, the morning after the election, Governor Daniels called a news conference, had all the statewide officials there to make the point that Richard Murdoch is a Republican, he's representing Republicans, and it's time for the whole party to come together. So we appreciated his support that way.
Well, I know that Governor Daniels, he did come out in support of Dick Lugar prior to the primary, but he was not one to mince words about his affection for you, his fondness for you, and how highly he does think of you. So it didn't seem like it was forced by the governor to come out in such wide praise of you the following morning, and I thought that was a good move and a solid move on the Governor Daniels' part.
Well, it was certainly much appreciated, and the governor and I have been friends since we first met 6-7 years ago, and he has been very supportive. And you know, I think when he sensed, even prior to the primary, those last few days when the polling numbers were so strong, he made a couple comments that he said Richard Murdoch would be a credible candidate, and he made something about if he runs against Joe Donnelly, he's got a far better than even chance of winning. And in some ways, I think that may have waved the green flag to even some of the people who were trying to maybe break away from Mr. Lugar and just looking for a reason to support me. And obviously, with the numbers we had support every age group of Republicans, men, women. It was just very demographically wide across our party.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that the primary's over, I know that there was a lot of it was a tense primary, to say the least. Has there been a lot of mending fences with you? Have people who were who may have been not necessarily anti-Murdoch, but just, you know, they were aligned with Richard Lugar. They had been since he was mayor of Indianapolis. Have you seen any of these kind of bridges mended? I know, because there was a lot of people who were thinking that, well, you know, now there really does need to be unity, just because it was such a tense primary.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. That's been happening every day since it's happened, where someone will come up to me and or they'll take the time to write me a note and say, you know, I was with Senator Lugar, but you've won. You said the right things. You ran the right kind of campaign. You're a quality guy. You have my support. And it's been so flattering to have so many people say that the quality of our campaign was what impressed them, in the sense that, yes, Mr. Lugar was my opponent, but I never treated him like my enemy, and that we were, if I dare say so, gracious and respectful of Mr. Lugar. And it's genuine, because to this moment, I have great respect for Senator Lugar. And honestly, I've had great empathy for him for the last few days. You know, I've lost elections, and it's not fun. And I can't imagine, after 36 years of service, especially the numbers being what they were, that I can't imagine what the senator's feeling. So I hope, you know, you will get past this very quickly. And as I said on election night, he's a great Hoosier. He's a great American. He's a historic figure. And the legacy of Richard Lugar will not be in the least bit impacted by what happened on Tuesday, May 8th. He'll be remembered for many, many good things. And that night will not be a part of that legacy.
Well, now that you're moving on, you are a general election candidate. We know who you're going to be facing in the Democrat or in the general election. Democrat Joe Donnelly. That much has been known pretty much since the beginning. The Donnelly campaign and Democrats here locally released a poll that basically shows now that you guys are in a statistical tie, a dead heat at 40-40 with 20% undecided. Now, it should be said that this particular poll that was released, not only did it include, it did not include the Libertarian candidate Andrew Horning, but it also only surveyed barely more Republicans, 31%, than Democrats at 30%, despite our huge GOP lean. And in a year when I can guarantee you this state is not going to go for Barack Obama, what do you make of this poll? I mean, one, I think it bodes well for you, because it already shows you in a statistical dead heat, and that when Dan Coats entered the race against Brad Ellsworth in 2010, he was in a statistical dead heat, and he also came out on top.
Well, I had forgotten that last point, but you're exactly right. And you're exactly right on your analysis of the data. I mean, my first reaction when I heard about it is it sounded very familiar to the polling techniques that were used when Senator Lugar reported in March that he was leading 55-28 over me. Mm-hmm. Well, when you look at the internals of the polling data, you knew it was just totally wacko for Republican voters, because it included so many independents who would never show up. Mm-hmm. Well, inversely, what Joe Donnelly and the Democrats just did was release a poll, as you said, that shows equal numbers of Republicans and Democrats, But I'll tell you, there's other polling that shows that's been published that shows Barack Obama's got 43% approval in this state. And here's the real thing that you can correlate in numbers right now, and that is the number of votes that Joe Donnelly has cast that would support the Obama agenda. And that agenda in Indiana does not support a stimulus program that Joe Donnelly voted for. It does not approve of Obamacare that Joe Donnelly voted for. It does not approve of the massive bailouts that Joe Donnelly voted for. You know, those kind of votes are what correlate, and in the end, that's what this election is going to be about, two things. It's going to be about his record and what he's done to connect himself with Barack Obama, and it's going to be what I'm talking about, which is a pro-growth agenda for the United States economy. Mr. Donnelly is if he were to end up in the United States Senate and Harry Reid stayed in the majority, how many more years would it go without having a budget? You know, I mean, they wouldn't even process it because they're afraid to do so because they don't want to put their names on it. So the voters of Indiana are going to have a clear choice. The poll is totally false, and if that's the way he wants to start the campaign, bring it.
Well, I like your fighter attitude. Of course, I've known you for a few years, and I've definitely known you to be one who is not who will not back down from a fight. And speaking of, you've actually taken it to this administration once before, all the way to the Supreme Court when you fought the Chrysler situation. Could you give us a little bit of background about that and your willingness to take on the administration?
Sure. It's a speech I've literally given 139 times. It's about a 40-minute speech. Obviously, they will give you the Reader's Digest version. But
yeah, this isn't a Lincoln day here.
There were several Indiana pension funds, including the Indiana State Police Pension Fund, that bought the secured debt of Chrysler. Mm-hmm. If you're a secured debt holder, it simply means in the event of a meltdown, you get your money back first. It doesn't guarantee you a single penny, but there are two types of creditors, secured creditors and non-secured. Before any non-secured would ever get the first penny, 100% of the money owed the secured creditors would be paid back in full. That has been American bankruptcy law literally since 1790, mm-hmm. until Chrysler. And in the Chrysler bankruptcy, the administration just basically threw away the law. They said to secured creditors, you're not first in line, you're going to the back of the line. And they took their chosen friends, not all of them, but they took some non-secured creditors, largely United Auto Workers, and gave them a big stake in the company, made them fully whole, and told secureds they didn't have the right to get their money back on the normal traditional basis. We filed suit against Chrysler and against the administration to say, you can't change the law. You can't take away the constitutional rights of Indiana's retired cops and retired teachers. You can't just take their property away arbitrarily. Mm-hmm. And you're right, it did go to the U.S. Supreme Court. The first time the Supreme Court took a pass, they let the bankruptcy proceed, which I still say was totally the wrong way to do it. However, 6 months later, on appeal, they took our case and basically validated all of our legal arguments because they struck down the decision of the Second Circuit Court that allowed the bankruptcy to go forward on that incorrect basis in June, 6 months before. So the good news is, and I'm not a lawyer, as you know, I learned in American law you can lose the battle and yet win the greater war, because one of our arguments was, if they could do that, that would send such a shocking message to the capital markets that people would quit investing. If they don't know what the rules are, people aren't going to invest. And in fact, if that were to allow to stand, other bankruptcies would happen. Companies would come in and say, well, you've got this legal precedent here called the Chrysler case. Let me have the Chrysler deal. Let me pick and choose who I want to pay and who I don't, and then I'll start all over. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, that's what the Supreme Court said could not stand, that precedent had to be struck down. And on our appeal, they did so.
We're talking with U.S. Senate candidate Richard Murdoch here from Indiana. Richard's been talking about how he has been willing to take on the Obama administration head on. And frankly, they're scared of you. You can tell already rumors are swirling that the Obama campaign is going to be pouring just a ton of money into this race behind Joe Donnelly, which means he can't run from the president. He is financially and also by his vote bound to the president. as well as Nancy Pelosi. But also, I guess you could call him one of the president's surrogates to a certain extent. Former President Bill Clinton decided to take a shot at you, saying, "The Republican position that tends to prevail in these primaries, expressed by the gentleman who beat Senator Lugar, who says, 'I'm just against compromise. We need to stop it. It's weak. It's foolish. Our views are irreconcilable. We have to force the American people to choose which one of us is right. If that prevails, we're toast,' Clinton said. 'We'll look like a Bush League country.'" That's a pretty heavy-handed attack against you. Meanwhile, he likes to pat you on the back by saying he actually likes you personally. Have you had the good misfortune, so to speak, of being in former President Clinton's company, that he might be able to make that kind of statement against you?
I've never met the man, so it's nice of him to say he likes me personally. I don't know where he picked that up, whether he likes the person he sees on TV or whatever, but I've never met Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes in politics you're best defined by your opponents and who those opponents are. And the point that I made throughout the primary campaign, and I'm sure we'll be talking about a lot because Joe Donnelly's indicated he thinks that ought to be the big issue, is whether or not Murdoch can ever work with the Democrats. Well, you know, when I was a county commissioner years ago, I could work with Democrats when there was a reasonable argument. As state treasurer a couple of years ago, when the Democrats controlled the Indiana House of Representatives, I worked with them to get some significant banking reform done for the Indiana banking industry. But the bigger point here is, and maybe this is what Mr. Clinton was trying to suggest, is this is a historical moment where the two sides in Washington they have irreconcilable differences. Republicans are saying, let's make government smaller, that'll solve our problems. And the Democrats are saying, no, let's make government bigger, that'll solve our problems. Those two sides can never reach agreement. Mm-hmm. And my point of view has been all along, as a Republican, I want to make sure we have more people there who think like I do, so bipartisanship begins to be seen as Democrats coming to the Republican side. You know, that's what they think bipartisanship should be, is whenever there's an argument, we have to agree with them. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to see us be in the majority, so they have to agree with our point of view. And I think, frankly, we're very close to that, because if there was a message from the Republican primary this time in Indiana, I think it is so many people came forward who hadn't been involved in politics before, because they sense there is something fundamentally wrong with Washington, D.C., and with the way it's spending our money and putting our future and our children's future at risk. And that's what the Democrats want to keep doing, by making government bigger. So if they think I'm going to compromise to put the country at risk, sorry, we're not going to make that deal.
Well, I thought it was pretty, all I can say is ballsy on his part to say that, taking the position that you just stated is Bush League, when Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, who you mentioned earlier, has not passed a budget in 3 years. And that is Bush League, continuing to put this country in economic peril. And they refuse to hear the budgets passed out of the House. The Obama administration, before it even passes the House, basically categorically denies that it even exists. And that is Bush League, when you're just being that heavy-handed against your opponents. Richard, you've got a tall task against you to bring reform to Washington, D.C., but I think, and I fully believe, that you can do this. I've been a supporter of Richard since day one. You can go back and check the roll. Well, you can't check it, I guess, because they don't publish general election votes. But I wrote in a challenger to Dick Lugar in 2006, so I've been on this whole thing against Dick Lugar for a long time, because I've seen what he's been. I've seen what he's been. And I was glad that we had a challenger like Richard Murdoch who would stand up and fight for the principles our nation was founded on and help bring our country back to stability. We need more people like Richard Murdoch, and it's going to be a true blessing when he wins in November. Richard, where can people get involved? Who may not be in Indiana, but how can they find out more about your campaign? How can they donate? How can they find out more about you?
Sure, Josh, and thank you for asking. They can go to richardmurdoch.com, and it is amazing how many thousands of people from all over this country have gotten on board with this race. It happened before the primary, even, but since then, we've just seen tremendous bump up in the people who are signing on for our emails, going to richardmurdoch.com, hitting the donate button and helping us in that way. We've just got a tremendous challenge ahead of us to beat Joe Donnelly. The Democrats think they have a chance in this race. As you mentioned, Barack Obama wants to come in and get involved. And okay, we're fine. Bring that on, too, because we want that to be the discussion. We want to compare our economic theory and how we've managed the state of Indiana, by the way, one of the best two fiscally sound states in the country, versus the way Barack Obama and Joe Donnelly have done it in Washington, D.C. I mean, there's a linkage there that I'm proud to make. There's a linkage there that Joe Donnelly's proud to make. So great, let's let the people in Indiana decide. But to get our message out, we do need help from all over the country. And if folks go to richardmurdoch.com, they can be a part of it. And by the way, I've said this before the primary, but I think it's even true now. This race in Indiana, I think it's really for the heart and soul of the Republican Party inside the United States Senate. It's about whether or not we're going to have that Republican voice that comes with a more conservative tone to it. Obviously, we've gotten through the primary now. That was a great step. But now it's, can we add that kind of thinking to the Republican caucus in the United States Senate? And I hope people all over the country are fired up to make that the Senate Republican body a bit more conservative. If they are, they'll go to richardmurdoch.com.
Well, I know I'm fired up, and I encourage every one of my listeners to go check out richardmurdoch.com. Richard, thanks for being on tonight.
My great pleasure. Thanks, Josh. You've always been kind in giving me time and helping promote us, and we appreciate it.
Absolutely, and I hope we have you on again here before the general rolls around, but you know, it's obviously going to be keeping you busy. We've been talking with Richard Murdoch, candidate for the U.S. Senate here in Indiana. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
Quite feel right where we're going, outcome uncertain, yes, but I am focused every moment, more determined, yes.
Begin recording at the tone.
Yeah, Joe Donnelly, now this is President Obama. I hear you want to stay in Washington as a U.S. Senator, and that's a great idea. And with all the bailout and stimulus money we gave the unions and government workers, you can count on them for campaign cash. The last thing I need is another Hoosier conservative blocking my agenda. I know we've racked up $5 trillion in debt over the last 3 years, but hey, we can't stop spending money now. I remember when you were in the House majority, Joe. Those were the good old days. You helped me and Pelosi all the way. We got the bailouts, the stimulus spending, and my favorite, Obamacare. We could always count on you, Joe. And with you in the U.S. Senate, we can march America forward.
President Obama is taking America off a fiscal cliff and running our economy into the ground. We don't need a rubber stamp for Obama's policies. And we don't need Joe Donnelly.
Paid for by USA Super PAC, 812-232-2434, and not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. USA Super PAC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Hey, I'm Essie Cupp. You're listening to FTR Radio. From the Right Radio. Online at FTRradio.com.
Welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I am pleased to have in this segment one of our frequent guests, policy chairman for the National Federation of Young Republicans, Jason Whitman. How you doing, Jason?
Doing great. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing just fantastic. Well, you know, we want to discuss a couple of things to you, with you tonight, but I thought that since one of your own was defeated in the Indiana primary recently, I thought you would we could bring you on to talk about further extinction of rhinos in Washington. Dick Lugar was defeated.
Dick Lugar, Mark Warner's favorite U.S. senator.
That's right. Yeah, Mark was...
How many days has he wept now? I mean, has it just been continuous, or...
Yeah, there really hasn't been much of a break. He has been crying nonstop. I do too. We were broadcasting live from Murdoch Victory HQ. At least Fingers and I were on Tuesday night. Mark and Thomas LeDuc were stuck with a bunch of establishment rhinos over at State GOP. Not all of them were rhinos. I mean, Mike Pence was there. He's going to be our future governor. But he was deciding to surround himself with his establishment stuffy types. And, he was pretty quiet that night. He may have said it was because he was working at the polls all day, but really, I mean, frankly, they called the Senate race before we even went live at 8 o'clock. So.
Yeah, it was such a beating. Richard Murdoch just owned him.
Yeah.
So badly.
I got to be honest with you. I was not expecting that. And I will say that, too.
I wasn't either. I mean, all of the pundit class had it a fairly close race.
Yes. Myself included.
Me, too. I mean, I honestly didn't think that Lugar would get beat by that wide of a margin. That was a real shock to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it says something about what Indiana Republicans are looking for in a candidate. Not only, you know, somebody who has conservative values, but maybe even somebody who has a residence in the state.
Well, you know, that can go a long way because actually a fairly conservative Republican in David McIntosh, former congressman who was seeking to run for Congress again after about a 12-year absence, including a 5-year absence from Indiana, he came back and many people kind of transpose the whole Dick Lugar carpetbaggerism to David McIntosh. And so you had actually an extremely conservative candidate lose on election night because he was dogged by residency issues as well. So I think you're actually hitting on something there.
Yeah, I mean, Indiana residents obviously want Indiana people who are residents of the state representing them. Seems logical to me.
It does to me, too. Well, what is honestly just kind of wild about the whole thing is that leading up to this whole fiasco with Dick Lugar's residency, our own embattled former Secretary of State here in Indiana, he has since been discharged of his position because he was charged and convicted of voter fraud because he voted at a residence in which he did not reside. And so you'd think that...
But there seems to be a trend here.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's with the Republican Party. But yes. Well, I mean, Dan Coats ran for and successfully won a Senate seat here in Indiana after he was accused of not owning a residence here in Indiana. But he was in a crowded primary. And what's interesting is that when you look at the numbers... Dan Coats actually got probably about the same amount of votes that Dick Lugar got, at least in terms of percentage, which was just over 39%. Whereas Dan Coats was able to have enough challengers where he was able to separate all that, you know, the remaining 60%+. Dick Lugar did not have that option. And so the 60% that was left went towards Richard Murdoch. So
that's producing a very remarkable result.
Very remarkable. So here's a question I have for you. How quickly, and do you think that national Republicans will be able to unify behind Richard Murdoch? Because I know that there was some strife when Joe Miller beat Lisa Murkowski. Now they did, but strife nonetheless.
Well, the one good thing is that we don't have to worry about Dick Lugar running as an independent against Murdoch. So that leaves a single candidate on the Republican ticket, mm-hmm. on the Republican side. And so I think that in and of itself makes it much more likely that Republicans are going to unify behind Murdoch. But, you know, the more I have listened to Mr. Murdoch, the more impressed I am with him as a candidate. Mm-hmm. He is not a fly-by-night candidate. You know, he successfully won, as I recall from a conference call here not too long ago, 90 out of 92 counties mm-hmm. in his primary in the state of Indiana. And in his statewide race, I believe he won 88 out of 92 counties, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is not his first rodeo.
Very true.
And I think that Republicans will unify behind him. I think national Republicans certainly will. I know that I certainly am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that he won. Yeah, I think it's a little bit disingenuous to say Dick Lugar never did anything for this country.
It is. And I think his detractors came out a little bit strong. I will say that Richard Murdoch never did.
Right. I didn't hear Richard Murdoch disparage Dick Lugar.
No.
I was a little bit disappointed with Lugar's response to his loss.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you make of that? I mean, here's a guy who's been in Congress for 36 years. Or in the Senate. He's lived up to the call of being a statesman. He literally has been. I'll give Dick Lugar his props, but that was just kind of childish.
It was really kind of disgusting. Actually, it wasn't Lisa Murkowski disgusting. But it was frustrating to me because when you lose a primary, the first thing that you should do, in my opinion, and I've lost a primary, so I know a little bit about this,
mm-hmm.
is to call your opponent, congratulate your opponent, and work on unifying the base behind the person that won the primary, mm-hmm. the Republican candidate. Because we need all of these seats in order to try and gain at least a majority in the Senate. I think there's almost no chance that we'll get a 60-seat majority, but we certainly need to try and get a majority in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And we need all of these seats. And so we need people, when they win these primaries, we need Republicans to unify behind these candidates. They need to win. We need to do whatever it takes to help them win. Well, and frankly, I've been pretty happy to see that the NRSC has been extremely supportive of Mr. Murdoch.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that they will do everything in their power to help him win. And that's encouraging to me as well.
You raise an interesting question, or an interesting point in bringing up the NRSC. Now, again, I fully expected them to embrace Richard Murdoch and to kind of move on. I mean, they're following Governor Daniels' lead and unifying behind the candidate. Let's be honest here, and you know, we just had Mr. Murdoch on the show, but I think that even though he won, and it was a great victory for conservative Republicans, especially base Republicans, but this really does kind of put Indiana in a bit of a hot spot, in that you know we're running, the Democrats are going to be running a very conservative to moderate Democrat in Congressman Joe Donnelly, the Democrats are kind of smelling blood. You know, they think that Indiana is now in play. How do you see this right now? And how do you see not just the NRSC, but the Democrat Senatorial Campaign Committee and other outside groups getting involved in this race? Because, frankly, this has gone from a solid red state to quite possibly, even though I believe Mr. Murdoch will win, in the general, it's still, I think, a lot of people will probably be viewing this as a toss-up to begin with.
Well, I think that Mr. Donnelly presents a little bit of a challenge. If you'll recall, he came out in support of, in the Fast and Furious case.
Mm-hmm. Conveniently. That was
yes.
the timing of that was...
Wasn't that convenient?
Yeah. Yeah, all of a sudden, he's the only Democrat supporting the investigation.
Right. Which amused me greatly.
Yeah, yes. Bravo, Congressman Donnelly. Your spine is made of steel.
Way to side with your party on that one.
That's right. That's right.
So, you know, I think that kind of gives you a little bit of a preview of what this campaign is probably going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he will probably try and take positions that are on the more conservative side from a Democratic standpoint
mm-hmm.
in an effort to get, you know, more of the moderates and more of the independents to side with him. I'm not sure he's going to be successful, though. And I really believe that Murdoch is such a good candidate with such a good history statewide in Indiana that, and good name recognition, by the way.
Yes.
It's going to be fairly challenging to defeat him in the same way that you might have defeated, say, Christine O'Donnell. Sure. Well, those are the obvious ones that come up every single time when you discuss this. But.
Well, exactly, because I think that you bring up another good point that Christine O'Donnell and Sharon Angle and Joe Miller, to a certain extent, these were all sort of novice candidates. I mean, granted, Sharon Angle, she had been a state rep, but and Christine O'Donnell had run before, but she had never had this level of visibility. She had never won a primary. But they were all, in a sense, novices to a certain degree, especially to the federal stage. But Richard Murdoch handled this certainly. I mean, there are going to be questions about how each campaign was handled. But as a candidate, he presents himself in a much more professional manner than those three did.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, those candidates, the other ones that we discussed, mm-hmm. made some pretty significant mistakes during their campaigns in the general election.
Mm-hmm.
And I think saying that they didn't is disingenuous.
Mm-hmm.
I really have a hard time believing that somebody with the experience of Mr. Murdoch is going to make those same sorts of mistakes in the general election. I really don't see that happening.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to switch gears on you here a bit, and I want to talk a little bit about we're going to move into another area of expertise for your policy, but just the way that, for instance, the Obama administration has been handling policy. Within the last couple weeks, they have rolled out the Life of Julia, which has been parodied to no end, one, here on FTRradio.com, but also just in the conservative blogosphere, the Twitter sphere, in social media in general. And this just seems to have been another misstep, just from my perspective, of seemingly the administration, the Obama campaign, they don't seem to kind of get it.
Well, certainly, I think it's interesting because in 2008, let's just be honest, mm-hmm. their campaign owned social media.
Yes.
They owned it.
Yeah, I use it as an example when I'm giving my presentations on social media. The gold standard of social media campaigns, it's the Obama campaign. I hate to say
Absolutely.
It, but it's true.
He raised an enormous amount of money. I think you'll have to confirm this, but I think it was over $500 million was raised from their social media campaigns.
That's incredibly effective. Scary. But
there is a huge difference in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Conservatives really, when you watch these Obama hashtag games on Twitter.
The attack watch. I mean, that failed within
attack watch
2 days.
Because of Obama. I mean, the list of the list of hashtag games that their campaign has come up with.
Dinner with Barack.
Absolutely owned by conservatives
yeah.
is mind-boggling. And you would think that they would learn, but they don't learn.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had you on before, and we've talked about how conservatives are terrible at communication with each other. Terrible in terms of keeping on talking points. But when it comes to social media, I mean, we're on top of it. We see something, we glom onto it, and we essentially point it out for the foolish campaign that it is very effectively in the vein of Andrew Breitbart. But how come, we could do this on social media, but we can't. For some reason, we can't get past that. I don't get it. But at the same time, for a campaign that was so good at social media, like you said in 2008, they have failed miserably in their ability to capitalize on it for an effective campaign in 2012.
Well, I think, and I could be completely wrong about this, but I think the fact that we now have a specific candidate, we have a nominee.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very specific
Wait a minute. Is that Ron? You're talking about Ron Paul, right?
I thought he's
still running, right? Mark Warner is still very excited about his candidacy.
Well, I thought he won Indiana, but anyway. for instance, this Julia thing.
Mm-hmm.
Julia was an example of cradle to grave babysitting. It was insulting to women. It was just, I think it was an abject failure by every possible metric. Mm-hmm. It was parody to no end, as you mentioned. Heritage did basically a parody of it from a conservative viewpoint that was very good, countering each one of the points that they brought up in that narrative. And in fact, you know, interestingly, I tweeted Jim Messina, who is Barack Obama's campaign manager, and he actually tweeted me back.
Really?
I said, yeah. I tweeted him and I said, well, so this was after we had pretty well owned the Julia hashtag and we owned the narrative. I sent him a tweet and I said, well, gee, how is this whole Julia narrative working out for you? And he tweeted me back and said, well, we think it's great and we love the Republican freakout. And I think it's just, I think it really showed what their mentality is that when we take these hashtag games over and we own them, they consider that a freakout. We don't consider it a freakout, obviously. It's mockery, pure and simple. It is just absolute mockery. Now, there's a big difference between freaking out and mocking stupidity. And they don't seem to understand that. And so every time they come up with one of these hashtag games, whether it's because of Obama or, you know, the Julia hashtag or...
The attack watch, the dinner with Barack.
Right. The White House chats, for that matter. You know, every single one of those, every time that they initiate one of those, we just absolutely own them.
Yeah.
And you would think that they would eventually realize, you know, this is not working.
Yeah.
We need to try a different approach. But the fact that we have become so strong as a movement, conservatives on Twitter, and I really consider Andrew Breitbart to have led the charge in that, I believe that we really are able to control and own narratives on that social media. Now, in the real, you know, in the real media, it's a lot harder.
Yes.
We have a lot harder time owning the narratives in the major media.
I know, but the thing about the social media, though, that I don't think can be understated, and mind you, I don't think that social media can win campaigns, but Barack Obama was able to successfully court the youth vote via social media. And by infiltrating social media as well as we have, I think we've actually caused a lot of that youth vote to question their rabid support for President Obama.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And then, of course, I think the fact that the unemployment rate among that age group is so incredibly high also makes this a lot harder for the Obama campaign going forward. Because they can't just go to Twitter and court the same people that they did in 2008, because now a lot of those people are out of college, living in their mom and dad's house without a job.
Yeah.
You know, and so that makes things a lot more challenging.
Well, hey, we're running out of time here, but I wanted to get your thought on one last thing, because I know you've been a supporter of Governor Romney's here for quite a while now. This past week, Rasmussen put out their daily tracking poll, and we can, you know, you can take daily tracking polls with a grain of salt, but frankly, it showed Mitt Romney at 50% and President Obama at 43%. Are we starting to see a shift here in the country in the terms of support for Governor Romney as opposed to President Obama?
Well, I'm always really careful to get excited about early polling numbers. However, that is certainly encouraging. And I think that what we might see is that that's going to encourage our base to unite behind Mitt. And I think it's going to discourage the Democrats to some degree. I think maybe you saw that in West Virginia with a felon, you know, getting...
40% of the vote.
40% of the vote.
A felon. Who's still behind bars.
Right. He's going to have a hard time running a campaign at this point. But, I mean, I think that that shows you that there is a real dissatisfaction with Obama among the electorate. And so these poll numbers, as I'm watching these daily tracking polls like you are, I get a little bit more encouraged with each one of them. You don't want to make policy with them, you know. You don't want to get too excited about it because there's a lot of time between
November. You don't want your position on gay marriage to evolve based on a poll or a donation.
Right. When you need to do some fundraising, you don't want to change your position.
That's right.
Which for Republicans is flip flopping, and for Democrats is evolving.
That's
right. Revolutionary when you're a Democrat. So.
Well,
so Tuesday, you know. Barack Obama was a hateful anti-gay bigot like the rest of us, and Wednesday morning he's making millions of dollars and he's a champion of gay rights. So.
Who knew you could evolve overnight?
And it's evolutionary. Yeah, that's just amazing.
That's just amazing. Well, we have been talking with Jason Whitman. Jason, where can people find you on the internet?
I am on the interwebs at Jason B. Whitman, and at thepoliticaloperative.com. I also contribute to Breitbart.com.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to Dr. Jason B. Whitman. Jason, thanks for being on the show this week.
Thanks, Josh.
You're welcome. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
FTR Radio salutes some of the great Democrat presidents in the radio era. FTR Radio.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Hey, I want to thank my guest tonight. We had U.S. Senate candidate from Indiana, Richard Murdoch. We were pleased to have him on to celebrate his victory from the primary last week. We had him on pre-primary. Now we have him on post-primary. And we're looking forward to supporting him on through the general election against Joe Donnelly. I also want to thank Jason Whitman, who is the National Policy Chairman for the Young Republican National Federation. We had a good discussion with him. I also want to bring your attention to the music that you heard tonight. As always, Soul Food 76 opens the show, and you also heard from Andy Ziff. You can check Andy out at andyzipf.com, andyzipf.com. And also, stay tuned for the Snark Factor with Fingers Malloy, as well as the Snark Factor players. They got a good show coming up for you. That's going to do it for us. We thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back with you again next week.
Don't speak like you used to. And where do we